Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll start by talking with Michael Kimmage about his book, Collisions. It's the story of Ukraine, and it's amazing. Then Marines Gill and Skip will review The Border in a book. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Michael Kimmage. He's a professor of history at the Catholic University of America. I was a Mideast war planner a few decades ago. I also had some responsibilities for a possible war in Europe, and that got me interested in Ukraine. I know a lot about the area, but Michael's book filled in gaps that I didn't even know existed. And his comments are appropriate for understanding what's going on there today. I'm delighted with his book. Thank you for joining us, Michael. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Denny.
Michael, how did you decide to become a history professor? How did that happen?
Well, that's a good question. It's a long time ago. I would say sort of childhood, teenage years with a general fascination in history. But I also grew up in upstate New York in a town that had a Air Force base. This would have been the 1980s. And so the Cold War was, very present for me. And I remember very well the collapse of the Berlin Wall, collapse of the Soviet Union. And that was the sort of time that I was entering college. And, so I've always been deeply interested in the United States, deeply interested in Eastern Europe, deeply interested in Russia. And those pieces sort of came together for me with my overall interest in history. And that, of course, is the kind of deep background to this book.
Okay. You served as a planner for our State Department about 10 years ago, didn't you? This is all related, isn't it? Same interest?
That's true. I think I was really hired there to provide a bit of historical context. This was the Office of Policy Planning between 2014 and 2016. And that for me was the opportunity of a lifetime to see our government in action, to see things from the inside, to get a sense of how foreign policy is made. And I hope that translates in the book into an empathy for how difficult it is to do foreign policy and the scale of the challenge, because that's something that my government service really impressed on me.
Indeed. Most people didn't even know there was a country named Ukraine until the Russian invasion. So start by giving us some background on the country or the area of Ukraine.
Well, we could go on and on with this topic. There's a lot of detail we could bring in. Let me do this in as short form a way as possible. Ukraine exists very powerfully in medieval times. This would be the 9th century to the 13th century, although the name was different then. And then there are long centuries of division and outside occupation. The Mongols, the Swedes, the Ottoman Turks, many other sort of great powers that move through. And then in the modern period, so let's say 1500 to 1991, there's also a story of division and outside occupation. This would be primarily the Russian Empire for the eastern half of Ukraine, and then Austro-Hungary for the western half of Ukraine. You have a kind of growth of Ukrainian consciousness in the late 19th century, early 20th century, but the 20th century is very rough on Ukraine. It's absorbed into the Soviet Union, or as a part of interwar Poland, is a part of all the battles in the Second World War on the Eastern Front for sure. And then a part of the Soviet Union until 1991, when Ukraine achieves its independence. So it's been a long, winding road to independence for Ukraine, and it's gone through a lot of war, trauma, and tragedy.
Are the Ukrainian people sort of a homogeneous people, or was Ukraine basically a tribal community for most of its life?
That's a very good question. I think homogeneous doesn't really apply. It's a very big country. After, if you would include Russia, it would be Ukraine would be the second largest country in Europe. If you exclude Russia, it's the biggest country territorially. Before the war, population was roughly 40 million people. And you have quite a bit of diversity there. You have, Crimean Tatars who have been, sort of moved out of Crimea after Russia's annexation. You have a Jewish population. I'm sure your listeners know that Volodymyr Zelensky is himself the president of Ukraine, has Jewish heritage. And then what you have, this is not exactly ethnic diversity, but it matters for the country in a lot of ways, is quite a bit of religious diversity. So Catholicism, a sort of church that's between the Catholic and the Orthodox worlds, a lot of Orthodox Christians who themselves have multiple churches in Ukraine, a Muslim and a Jewish population as well. So I would say it's heterogeneous. There is a sense of Ukrainianness, to be sure, but it's a heterogeneous country.
Well, and one of the things I know is that just because everybody belongs to the same religion doesn't mean that they religions have group, subgroups and sub-subgroups. So there's a lot of opportunity for disagreement there.
Absolutely.
So Ukraine, it's always been a somewhat homogeneous group. The people knew about each other and weren't fighting each other in tribal communities or cultures. Tribes are fighting each other all the time. That's pretty much the story of most of the history of the world, even today. So that was not something that they had too much of. Am I reading this right?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, you have, let's just take Ukraine from sort of 1991 to the present. You know, before 2014, the Russian invasion then, and before 2022, you had different kinds of orientations in Ukraine. It may not have been, you know, deep-seated tribal differences, but there were those who leaned a bit more toward Russia, those who leaned a bit more toward Europe. And, you know, Ukrainian politics in the 90s and in the first two decades of the 20th century, it kind of goes back and forth in that regard. But after 1991, Ukraine is a country that's very much at peace with itself. And there's not, you know, any kind of serious internal disturbances in the country once it achieves its independence.
Okay. While it was a part of the Soviet Union, how was it treated? Did it really have a standalone category, or was it just another area controlled by Moscow?
No, it's a special story of Ukraine and the Soviet Union, and I would make here two points that don't really line up well with each other, but they're both true about Ukraine in the Soviet Union. The first, and this is, I think, very prominent in today's Ukraine, is the story of exploitation, the way in which the Soviet Union colonized Ukraine, forcibly Russified Ukraine in many respects. And then what's first and foremost in the mind of many Ukrainians is the famine in 1932, which is an artificial famine. It takes place in Kazakhstan as well as Ukraine, but the, you know, the loss of life in Ukraine is just terrific. And not to mention the kind of the gulag and the repressiveness of the Soviet Union, which very much affected Ukraine as well. So there's definitely a story of persecution. But Ukraine was also, of all the sort of republics after the Russian one, was quite privileged in the Soviet Union. And that's, you know, a bit perplexing. But a lot of the Soviet leaders, top level leaders, medium level leaders have Ukrainian background, or they have, you know, a bit of Ukrainian background. That would be true for arguably for Khrushchev, for Brezhnev, and for Gorbachev. And Ukrainians do a lot to run the Soviet Union. As well, that might not be something that Ukrainians are, you know, particularly proud of or happy about at the present moment, but that's a part of the historical record.
You know, I had no clue of that, but it certainly makes sense because it's a I don't know what to call it. The people cared. They moved on. They weren't primitive. They were moving forward throughout history, as I've read it. Am I reading that right?
Well, I think certainly, yeah. There's a long record of cultural accomplishments and achievements. And I think what Ukrainians would also point to, and of course, this is very relevant for the present moment, there's a long record of perseverance in Ukraine. You know, it's a country that's enjoyed political independence in the modern period, really, for 33 years. That's 1991 to the present. Otherwise, it's been kind of struggling to exist and to survive. And so I think perseverance is something that could easily be associated with Ukraine and with Ukrainians.
So Ukraine did become, or maybe again become, an independent nation when the USSR dissolved.
Yes.
And that's when they started thinking that they weren't part of Russia anymore. And apparently Russia had some other thoughts on that. There's more to discuss about Ukraine, and Michael is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. Go about halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
America's veterans sacrificed in service to this country. They deserve quality medical care after taking off the uniform.
Concerned Veterans for America was instrumental in expanding access to needed care to millions of veterans by getting the VA Mission Act passed. But that fight continues until all veterans can get the care they need.
You can help empower veterans with better health care options. Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Professor Michael Kimmage about Ukraine. So Ukraine was independent, and then Russia decided that they wanted to control some of it. There was a period of there where they were pretty much independent, and Russia didn't object to that too much. Am I right?
That's very true. You know, there are degrees of dependence. I think when Ukraine becomes its own country in 1991, it's dependent on Russia for gas and oil supply, certain things economically. There's a certain amount of corruption between the two countries that built dependencies. But Ukraine is very much a free and independent country, I would say, until 2004. 2004, you have something called the Orange Revolution, where Ukraine begins to tip a little bit more toward Europe and the United States. And that's something that Russia really doesn't like. But what also happens, you know, sort of 6 years or so after the Orange Revolution, 2010, you get a very pro-Russian president in Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych. So from 2010 to 2013, you know, from Russia's perspective, everything is just fine. You know, Ukraine is not interested in joining NATO. It's, you know, cutting all kinds of deals with Russia, making the right statements from a Russian perspective about culture, language, identity in Ukraine. And then when Yanukovych is deposed in a revolution that takes place between November 2013 and February 2014, everything changes. And the Russian attitude is completely different. And the moment Yanukovych leaves Ukraine, you have the annexation of Crimea. And a few months after that, you have the invasion of eastern Ukraine. Sometimes people call it the Donbas. So Russia was willing to tolerate a Ukraine that was independent as long as it was demonstrating some degree of loyalty to Russia. When that wasn't there, you know, Russia began to use force to bring Ukraine closer. But the irony of that is the more force Russia used, the more it pushed Ukraine away. So Russia put itself in a real bind in 2014. It bit off a piece of Ukrainian territory, but in the process, it alienated most of Ukraine from Russia.
Yeah, and you mentioned corruption. You know, most of the world, there's, what, 200 nations or so in the world. Most of them are, by the standards that we would use, are corrupt. That doesn't mean totally at every level, but there's corruption there. There certainly is in our government. So that's something that just is there. Okay, we got a war going on now. Ukraine seems to be doing quite well holding out against Russia. Why aren't the other European nations helping them more? Isn't it clear that if Russia's successful here, they could very well start to gobble up somebody else next? NATO isn't that strong anymore either, is there?
I think NATO is strong enough to intimidate Russia, and that may have a lot to do with the nuclear umbrella that's there. But you know, you also have Finland that's joined the alliance recently, and it's brought a lot of assets to the alliance. And, you know, I think there's enough there in NATO. I'm sure it wishes it was stronger, but there's enough there in NATO to keep Russia very concerned. Your question is a very hard one to answer, I find, Danny, and it's a very important one about why Europe is not doing more. The other thing you could ask, why is Europe not doing faster the things it's already promised to do for Ukraine? You know, you can say, on the one hand, that what Europe has done is kind of remarkable. They've cut off their economies from Russia. In the case of Germany, this has been at real cost to the German economy. You know, they've sort of built a wall between themselves and Russia in many ways. And there's been a huge amount of financial assistance to Ukraine. And Europe has been very generous in terms of accepting Ukrainian refugees. So it is important to note what Europe is doing. What Europe's not doing, and this to me is baffling, and I think you probably agree, just given how you framed your question, what Europe is not doing is mass producing, you know, artillery and ammunition for Ukraine. It's strange because Europe is a very, very wealthy part of the world. Russia's doing this for itself in a way that's having an effect on the war. And I think in Europe, either it's red tape or, you know, too many countries kind of, you know, all at once trying to decide policy, Or there just isn't a feeling of urgency. That feeling of urgency was there in the first few months of the war when people thought Kyiv could fall. Now Ukraine has stood strong, and the feeling might be that this is how it's going to be forever, so we don't need to rush. If that's the case, I think it might be a very costly form of complacency.
Yes, and given the fact that our nation is now in horrible shape financially, indeed, we've given away so many of our military supplies, ammunition, and that sort of thing, that we don't have enough to stand against any war right now. We can't keep it up. Can Ukraine just sustain itself without outside support? I wouldn't think so.
Ukraine certainly needs outside support. And one of the things that Ukraine has done in the course of the war, and in my view, I think it will be the right choice over the long term, but it has its dangers, is Ukraine has shifted from a post-Soviet military to a more NATO-style, or you could say American-style military in terms of equipment, training, the way that they fight. And I think that that's brought some success to Ukraine over the last year and a half, 2 years. But it does mean that Ukraine has become a lot more dependent on supplies from the outside. And Ukraine also is dependent on money from the outside just to pay nurses' salaries and teachers' salaries and sort of keep the lights on. So that support is very crucial. I think when you look at the big picture, it's still not too bad for Ukraine. You know, the countries supporting Ukraine include all of Europe, Canada, Japan, Singapore, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, and of course, the United States. So the United States can't figure out what it wants to do with its, sort of assistance to Ukraine that's getting played out in the halls of Congress. But at the same time, the U.S. is sort of doing a lot that's not just supplying money and equipment. The U.S. is helping with intelligence. It's helping with targeting. You know, sort of Germany recently has doubled its financial commitment to Ukraine. So it's not an easy situation for Ukraine. It's sort of not a pretty picture. There's a lot of back and forth, up and down. But the level of support is still, I would say, pretty high. And what Ukraine has to do is to translate that support into a robust military-industrial complex within Ukraine itself so that it can really be its own, it can be its own supporter. And that actually is happening. And there's, I think, among analysts, some optimism about where that could bring Ukraine in 2025.
Okay. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam, Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking Ukraine with Michael Kimmage. We're about out of time. So quickly, do you have any idea how and when this war will end?
I think it won't. I think it's going to be a decades-long conflict. It could end if Russia would change gears and think differently about the region, but I don't think that that's going to happen. I think what Ukraine needs to do is find multiple ways of defending its cities, its airspace, the territory that's still under Ukraine's control, which is 83% of the country, and that is a lot. Ukraine, of course, needs to maintain its partnerships and friendships with other countries and, you know, sort of be very resolute about a military threat to Ukraine that's just not going to go away. They have to have patience. They have to have a long view. They have to have a long-term strategy. And if they have all of those things, I think they will pull through. You know, one key point, maybe we can kind of conclude on this, is that Russia, one of the world's biggest militaries, has fought a war for just about 2 years by now, or a little bit more. And it's really not taken any of Ukraine's major cities. And that's a decisive factor in the war. So Russia is failing to achieve its political objectives. It can still cause a lot of harm to Ukraine. Ukraine has to figure out a way over the long term to minimize that harm and to achieve as much normalcy as it can under the circumstances. Not easy, but doable.
Yes, sir. Michael, your book is entitled Collision. How can listeners buy it? When will it be out? And how can listeners get a copy?
Well, I think all the usual channels, you know, sort of Amazon. I don't know about local bookstores in terms of a book like this appearing there. So maybe Amazon and the Oxford University Press website. But the book comes out on the 22nd of March, just a bit under the 1 month, line of the second anniversary of the war. So for people who are looking for the bigger picture, for a bit of context, for a bit of history, to get a feeling for what's going on now in Ukraine, Europe, and I would say even globally, I think this might be the book for you.
I truly agree with that statement. It's a great book. Thank you, Michael, for sharing this important information today. And thank you for serving our nation by educating us with stuff we really need to know. Thank you.
Thank you for doing the same with your podcast, Danny.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Gil and Skip will discuss the border in a book. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving some serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Hey. HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for Marine B&B. By the way, B&B doesn't stand for bed and breakfast. You would not want the bed and breakfast Marines normally get. No, Marine vet Gil Mazza is a retired border patrolman, and he'll discuss our nation's southern border. So welcome, Gil. Are you ready to talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about it a little bit. I think that one of the most interesting things that has happened recently in the entire immigration discussion or debate, so to speak, is the fact that it's gotten such of the attention of Elon Musk. And if you are have an account on X and you're looking at his posts and he's talking about how, you know, especially right now, the biggest subject is the fact that how much this illegal alien invasion is going to add to the census numbers. Now, in the last census, six states, their electoral college was adjusted and altered due to the numbers of illegal aliens that they, by law, have to count now. They have to count both U.S. citizens and illegal aliens present. So it's all the heads that are in the House. They count them all. And that resulted in six states moving favorably in the electoral college towards a Democrat vote. Now, as of right now, we probably have, at my estimation, and many others conservatively even, over 50 million illegal aliens present in the United States today, adding to what was before Biden's administration to now. And with that, the birth rate of foreign people that have immigrated into the country and illegal aliens is about six times the rate of the American citizens. So do the math.
Yep. Well, everything you said, I know that to be true. So here's my question for today. What in all the admission of illegal aliens into our country, what's good for America out of that? Why would any American citizen be happy with that?
Well, that's the thing, right? They sold us this entire illegal invasion nightmare as good for the country. It's going to be good for our workforce. It's going to be good for the economy. It's going to be good for diversity, whatever that means. Good, 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 all the way around. You know, as far as Nader's concerned, you know, we get our crops picked and we can make more babies as we go. So that's supposed to be the good part of it. On the other side of it, we're spending $500 billion per year in the last 3 years for this entire, what I call, illegal alien invasion enterprise, right? Because it's the biggest cottage industry going in the country right now. And I'm wondering, Colonel, when the Americans are going to see a return on that investment of taxpayer money that it seems to be an endless funnel.
Yeah. And if you add to the fact that we don't have that money, that means we're borrowing it, which means we have to pay interest on it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not only spending money we don't have, it's spending money in the future we don't have either.
Well, we're spending our children's money.
Yeah. Grandchildren's money.
And grandchildren. Yes. Yes. And that's the thing, right? So right now, we're still releasing 5,000 to 6,000 unvetted, unknown illegals per day, not counting the astronomical number of gotaways that are getting out there. We're seeing now, even Bill Malusian from Fox News said that illegal aliens are killing our American citizens at such a rate that they can't even keep up with it on the news.
Wow. But no surprise. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if you were a criminal who wanted to go out and just kill people to make money, where would you rather be? Venezuela or here?
Well, that's the thing. So I just had a phone call from another organization that I do an update for, and they have a son that's in South Africa trying to come visit his mother for just a few months. The guy is established. He's got his own business. He's got his own house, his family all there, all established. All he wants to do is visit. And they're on the third time that he gets rejected after spending almost $3,000-something per appointment. He's gotten rejected every time. And yet I told her, I said, just have him come through the southern border. I mean, not only will they let him in, they will give him a ride to New York for you. No problem, right? Because they'll allow unvetted, unsecured, special interest aliens by the hundreds of thousands to funnel in all day long. But people that are legitimately trying to get in the right way, shut the doors on their faces.
Makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it?
Ugh.
Final thought, Gil?
Well, you know, where are we going with this? You know, you would have thought that during, you know, the election that's coming, that they would start battening down the hatches, maybe tightening things up a little bit, pretending to be team players, trying to figure out how to at least mitigate the traffic. But they seem to be double and tripling down on this. And I believe it's because they legitimately think that they are untouchable and completely above the law. And so far, they've been proven right.
Unfortunately, you're right. Thanks, Gil. I appreciate you, even if you are a Marine.
Well, I appreciate that, Colonel.
This is Colonel Lenny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're doing the Marine B&B with Gil and Skip. And author Skip Coriel, also a co-host, is now going to discuss an interesting book. Tell us about your book, Skip.
Well, Colonel, I'm not sure I can. I mean, every time we do this, Gil gets me all worked up about the southern border. And then I'm supposed to be calm and rational as I discuss an intellectual book here. But
wait, you Colonel, said calm and rational, Skip?
Yeah, I will do my best, okay? I'll do my best. As far as illegal aliens go, you know, I don't mind if they pick my crops, but I can make my own babies. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, that's good to know.
All right. All right. The book, it's titled To the Uttermost Ends of the Earth. And then the subtitle is The Epic Hunt for the South's Most Feared Ship and the Greatest Sea Battle of the Civil War. It was written by Tom Clavin and Phil Keith. And this, it's really quite fascinating. You know, when you study the Civil War, you find out that there weren't a whole lot of epic sea battles during the Civil War, primarily because the South didn't have a really big navy. They had a few ships. They were totally overmatched by the Union Navy. And, you know, the things that happened were mostly on the Mississippi River. And the Union usually prevailed because they just had more ships and better training. And most of it was done they were blockading, you know, all the southern ports. But this epic battle, it was called the Battle of Cherbourg. And it occurred on June 19th, 1864, off the coast of Cherbourg, France. And it was between the USS Kearsarge and the CSS Alabama. And really, it was it's a story about two men, Captain Raphael Semmes, who was the captain of the CSS Alabama in the Confederacy, and then Captain John Winslow, who captained the USS Kearsarge. And the USS Kearsarge, it was a sloop of war, and it had been tasked with sinking the CSS Alabama. That was its total job. And the Secretary of the Navy told Captain Winslow, he said, "You are to travel to the uttermost ends of the earth, if necessary, to find and destroy the Alabama." And it took him about a year and a half to actually do that. And it ended up in this epic, epic battle. But, you know, you have to ask, you know, why did they want the Alabama so bad? Why did they want to sink it? And it's because basically the CSS Alabama was a raider. It was a merchant raider. And it was just devastating Union merchant ships going, you know, back and forth from America to Europe. And the Alabama was hurting the Union economy. And so, man, they hated the Alabama. And they just wanted it sunk really, really bad. And another interesting point here, Raphael Semmes from the Confederacy and John Winslow from the Union, they were once shipmates. And they fought together in the Mexican-American War. That's another thing that I find out. The more I study the Civil War, the more I realize that in order to understand the Civil War, you have to also study the Mexican-American War, because all of the soldiers, sailors, fighting men that fought the Civil War, they cut their teeth on the Mexican-American War, and they all knew each other, and they had friendships with them. And it was just amazing. There's really no other war in American history that was like that. But that I highly recommend the book. You know, it's really great, incredibly detailed account leading up to that battle and then the actual battle itself. But it's awesome. You can just check it out on Amazon. It's called To the Uttermost Ends of the Earth, The Epic Hunt for the South's Most Feared Ship and the Greatest Sea Battle of the Civil War, written by Tom Clavin and Phil Keith.
Thank you, Skip. That's awesome. So folks, again, as Skip just said, To the Uttermost Ends of the Earth, a great book. And what he just said about the Civil War and the Mexican-American War, certainly true. Skip, thank you. We're good at putting up with each other, aren't we?
Yes, we are, Colonel.
And thank you, Gil, for joining us.
Just keep telling yourself that, Colonel.
And thank you, Gil. I'm glad you're on the team now.
I am too. Thank you.
And Skip, you're back on in a minute. Next up is Military History and our Self-Defense Report. We'll be right back. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com, 10% off promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do a bit of coin collecting. Universal Coin is the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins, and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. Go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Sue Ellen, an Army mom, was wildly impressed with the interview with the rabbi from FIDF. That was great.
Sue Ellen, the Friends of the Israeli Defense Force, has a real mission that helps both Israel and our nation. I'm really fond of it.
And Roger, an Air Force vet, was very impressed with Pat Harrigan. He sure hopes Pat gets elected. We need people like him in Congress.
Roger, I totally agree. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 22 March 1820, Navy officer Stephen Decatur, hero of the Barbary Wars, was mortally wounded in a duel with disgraced Navy Commodore James Barron at Bladensburg, Maryland. Although once friends, Decatur sat on the court-martial that suspended Barron from the Navy for 5 years in 1808 and later opposed his reinstatement, leading to a fatal quarrel between the two men. Appointed to the Navy Board of Commissioners, Decatur arrived in Washington in 1816, where he became a prominent citizen and lived a satisfying life politically, economically, and socially. In 1818, however, dark clouds began to gather when he vocally opposed Barron's reinstatement into the Navy. The already strained relations between the two men deteriorated, and in March 1820, Decatur agreed to Barron's request to meet for a duel. Dueling, though generally frowned on, was still acceptable among Navy men. On March 22, Decatur and Barron lifted their guns, fired, and each man hit his target. Decatur died several hours later in Washington, and the nation mourned the loss of the great naval hero. Barron recovered from his wounds and was reinstated into the Navy in 1821 with diminished rank.
Skip, Marines are part of the Navy. Do you guys duel?
With Nerf guns, actually, we do, yeah.
Okay. And on 22 March 1944, during World War II, German Admiral Dönitz ordered all U-boats to disperse from groups and work singly. This decision represents the final victory of the Allied escorts over German U-boats. The Germans had decided to give up on convoy attacks until new U-boat designs could become available, and they never did.
And on 18 March 1969, B-52 bombers were diverted from their targets in South Vietnam to attack suspected communist base camps and supply areas in Cambodia for the first time in the war. President Nixon approved the mission, formally designated Operation Breakfast, at a meeting of the National Security Council on March 15. This mission and subsequent B-52 strikes inside Cambodia became known as the Menu Bombings. A total of 3,630 flights over Cambodia dropped 110,000 tons of bombs during a 14-month period through April 1970. This bombing of Cambodia and all follow-up Menu operations were kept secret from the American public and our Congress because Cambodia was ostensibly neutral. To keep the secret, an intricate reporting system was established at the Pentagon to prevent disclosure of the bombing. Although the New York Times broke the story of the secret bombing campaign in May 1969, there was little adverse public reaction. Colonel, is it true that the government sometimes withholds things from the American public?
I don't know. I've heard rumors of that effect.
Okay, I think they do.
And on the 19th of March, 2003, the U.S., along with coalition forces primarily from the United Kingdom, initiated a war on Iraq. Just after explosions began to rock Baghdad, Iraq's capital, President George W. Bush announced on a televised address, quote, "At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger." President Bush and his advisors built much of their case for the war on the idea that Iraq, under dictator Saddam Hussein, possessed or was in the process of building weapons of mass destruction, which was reasonable as Saddam had used weapons of mass destruction several times in the previous decade. Hostilities began about 90 minutes after the U.S. imposed deadline for Saddam Hussein to leave Iraq or face war. The first targets, which Bush said were of military importance, were hit with Tomahawk cruise missiles from fighter bombers and warships stationed in the Persian Gulf. In response to the attacks, the Republic of Iraq Radio in Baghdad announced that, quote, "The evil ones, the enemies of God, the homeland and humanity, have committed the stupidity of aggression against our homeland and our people," end quote. Though Saddam Hussein had declared in early March 2003 that, quote, "It is without a doubt that the faithful will be victorious against aggression," end quote, he went into hiding soon after we invaded, speaking to his people only through an occasional audio tape. Coalition forces were able to topple his regime and capture Iraq's major cities in just 3 weeks, sustaining very few casualties. President Bush declared the end of the major combat operations on 1 May 2003. Despite the defeat of conventional forces in Iraq, an insurgency continued through an intense guerrilla war in the nation in the years since the military victory was announced, resulting in thousands of coalition military, insurgent, and civilian deaths. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
A teenage girl is in critical condition after another teenage girl repeatedly smashed her head into the cement during a brawl near Hazelwood High School just outside St. Louis, Missouri. The fight broke out about 2:30 p.m. Friday, and the entire event was broadcast on video all over social media. The video shows a much larger black girl attacking a smaller white girl. Many are calling it a hate crime, but the authorities have yet to put forth a motive for the attack. The smaller girl is seen going into convulsions after her head is viciously slammed into the concrete 4 times. The attacking teen was arrested and charged with assault, while the victim is still in the hospital in critical condition. She may not live.
Thanks, Colonel. Part of my daily job is to research and study violent crime. But I can tell you that this video was difficult to watch, and it was absolutely shocking, even for an old Marine like myself. When I watch a crime video, I have to watch it several times in order to pick up on subtle things that others don't. Usually, I can distance my feelings from the violence, but this time I couldn't. Here's the thing, folks. St. Louis is one of the most dangerous places in America right now. In fact, our big cities are rapidly disintegrating into chaos. The law of entropy is in play here, and I don't expect it to get better. Remember the words of William Butler Yeats when you think of our largest cities. Things fall apart. The center does not hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. But my job here today isn't to give a social commentary, but more importantly, to give you tactical advice on how to protect yourselves and the ones you love. Here's my unvarnished and frank advice. First and foremost, get out of America's big cities. The larger the city, the more dangerous it is. And the inner cities rival even places like Gaza and third world countries. If you have no choice but to stay in the city, then live a low-risk lifestyle. Hunker down and only go out when you have to. You are now living in a war zone, so act accordingly. Second, get your kids out of the public school system. Enrollment in public schools has been steadily declining for about 5 years now, and that trend will continue as society continues its downward spiral into a godless world. St. Louis is just the canary in the coal mine, and this virus of violence is spreading to small towns all across the country. As a student of history, I can see that something big is on the horizon, something big and something terrible. So get your family to a safer place while you still can. Oh, and one more thing. Pray. Pray to God that violent people wake up and turn their lives around. And pray for all the victims of violence, like this girl in St. Louis, who now lays in a hospital fighting for her life. Pray with Frontlines of Freedom and turn back to traditional God-fearing values, because the only thing that can save America is turning back to God.
Amen. Well said, Skip. I totally agree. Our movie of the month is Nullarbor. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. And I'd appreciate getting your comments about the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the new World War I memorial with sculptor Sabin Howard and General Michael Flynn. Then we'll talk with Special Forces vet Scott Vidima. Adam Lalonde will then discuss making America food independent. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on Frontlines of Freedom or on Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.